Kevin has a question.
Kevin.
As part of my practice, I recite the daily contemplations, the five daily reflections. And recently I've started to wonder about the language used around karma and its relationship to family, born, heir, related, supported, and if you can speak to that, do you see that as something, I presume it's intentional, but how intentional, or do you see implications in that?
Well, I would think that's, I mean, I never really thought of it before, but I think that, there's kind of a familial sense. Yeah, born and my karma, related to karma, abide supportive thing. So that they're and again, you realize, okay, this is actually our community, is our actions. and that's the community that we build, or the family that we build. And we create those relationships. I mean, it's a bit of an extension to the actual, say, blood relations that we have, but you realize everything ends up being related through how we perceive it and how we interact with it, because everything has a result. Part of that language is probably pretty deliberate on the Buddha's part, because those five recollections are very much right out of the Buddha's words from the canon. So and the Buddha was amazingly articulate in his choice of language. Somebody had a question there? Yes.
Yeah, so I have a family.
Yep.
We got soccer practice, work.
Yep.
Christmas lights. We're getting ready for Christmas now. And so I sit at night, I read the Dhamma books, listen to the podcast.
Yep.
But then at the end of the day, there's like that doubt. What am I doing? Am I going on this path? I come here and I feel so calm. I can talk. I've listened to you guys. I'm like, and you're real, And it's like, what am I doing? Do I have the right effort? How do I know I have the right effort? And it becomes this doubt.
Yep.
And I don't know, do I just keep pushing through? I want to ask questions like, oh, the answer is going to be discernment. That's always the answer, discernment. It's like, well, how do I know? And I think that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that becomes a doubt, and then I got my practice.
Yep.
And I start rambling.
I think the important thing is to recognize that, I mean, one, you do know in the sense that you know when you feel calm or when you feel agitated, you know that. You know when you feel happy or when you feel sad, you know that. And so the Buddhist, and that's the fundamental basis for the Buddhist teachings. Like when the Buddha right from the get-go, when he started teaching, he used the Four Noble Truths as a basis. So that understanding that there is suffering and there is an end to suffering. There is discontent and there is an ending of discontent. There is, dis-ease, and there is that which is really easeful. So that he brought the teachings to a place of experience, as opposed to a place of say, ideal, conceptualizing what it should be or could be or what might be. And I think particularly for us as Westerners, our default option is to go to the ideas and and the Buddha's teaching always trying to remind us to come back to the experience. And we can trust that, because the ideas, there's lots of room for doubt. You can drive a truck through those ideas. Feeling is that those feeling, the experience is much more that's tangible, and we can pay attention to that, and we can learn from that, and we can keep working from it. It doesn't mean we're going to be get it right all the time, but we've got a handle on it. And it's like coming back, and one gains confidence in that when one recognizes, yeah, this feels good, this feels right, or well, this really feels bad. I need to avoid that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The Buddha also praised raising a family righteously, but what we don't want to do is like one foot in, one foot out. So. But whatever we do, if we do it completely, there's no doubt that it's wholesome. So if we become monks, we do it completely. If you're going to raise a family, do it completely. And if you do it completely, there's no doubt that it's good.
Yes.
Buddha talked about choosing the middle path, but. How do I know that this is the middle path? This is not too much, not too much.
Same thing. You're trying to think. You're trying to get a conceptual answer of what the middle is, and there's no resolution with thought. The middle path is always in terms of what is it that's going to lead to increased well-being and happiness and decreased suffering and difficulty. It's on an experiential level.
It's like riding a bicycle. It's like the balance, the middle way is that quality of balance. And if you're out of balance, then you've either fallen off to the left or you've fallen off to the right. But if it's balanced, then you can ride your bike. It's not an idea. It's not a concept. It's like, are you on your bike or are you on the ground?
Yep. It's a moving target, but that's why you get a feel for it as opposed to having an idea about it.
You can't learn to ride a bicycle by reading a book about it. You've got to get on the bike and start moving.
And you'll fall over. You know, it's just part of it. It's part of the deal.
If we're afraid of falling over, we never want to fall over, we'll never learn. Mm-hmm. Never learn how to do it.
Yeah.
You were talking about the Dhamma and the Vinaya, like the teachings and the training.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, when you think of the training for a lay practitioner, mm-hmm. what do you have in mind other than like the precepts?
Well, there's a whole range of, of course the precepts are a solid foundation. But all of the meditation practices,
okay.
Teaching, implementing the teachings around, we'll say, like communal harmony, which is what I talked about. And then, there's a whole range. There's things of sort of the Buddha, of course, puts an emphasis on right livelihood. And then different responsibilities and duties that one has towards. Whether it's family members or colleagues in terms of work, different aspects of relationships within the society and the culture. So those are all form a part of a training. And because it concerns our relationships of a body and speech. So that's what comes to mind off the top of my head.
Yeah, how to be a good friend.
Yeah, how to be a good friend. There's some many different discourses that the Buddha gave on how to be a good friend in that sense, but kalyana mitta and both how to be a good friend, how to discern a good friend, and because the Buddha did place huge importance on these good spiritual friendships or good spiritual companions as being really integral to our growth and development in Dhamma.
So, one more question.
Yeah.
Last night at the first Tuesday meeting, I was talking about feelings, and I think you were saying it was like an analogy of birth control to stop them from becoming aversion or desire. And my understanding now is that's from dependent origination. It's speaking about dependent origination. I was wondering if you could, someone could speak more to that.
Essentially, it's a distinguishing between liking something and wanting to own it, to have it, or disliking something and contending against it or wanting to get rid of it. So the feeling of liking and disliking, or neutral feeling, that in itself, that is quite possible to be quite fully mindful and aware of that without a lot of confusion. So even an arahant has feelings. The fully enlightened Buddha feels dislike and like and pleasant, sweet tastes, bitter tastes, comfort and discomfort. You know, when the Buddha was 80 years old, he had chronic pain. He points out the only way he can feel comfort is to completely absorb his mind into emptiness. Otherwise, he's experiencing painful feeling. Like he says, his body's like an old cart, held together with straps and strings. And so that feeling of pain or feeling of pleasure, it's totally possible to be mindful of that and be unconfused about that. With the question time yesterday and discussing that, it's when the mind, as it were, crosses the bridge from I like to I want, or I dislike to I can't stand, I've got to get rid of, I hate, then that quality of mindfulness is being lost. And that and if there's very little mindfulness from the get-go, then the bridge is crossed very quickly. So that the mind very easily goes from, I like to I want, I got to have, this is great, how can I get more of it? And so that's where we, in Buddhist psychology, would say being born into that liking that particular sense object or disliking that object, blaming that physical pain or that irritating person for being the cause of all your problems. If only that person, if only you weren't there, I would be happy. If only this pain disappeared, I would be happy. The mind gets born into that particular experience, and the rest of the world is, the universe is screened out. Is this the thing that I want that's going to make me happy, or the thing that I dislike that I that's making me unhappy, and if I can get rid of it, then happiness will be found. So that, but using that and that languaging of birth control, it was one of the spiritual birth control was the title of one of the Amravati Sunday talks. We come up with catchy titles for these things. The spiritual birth control is like the easiest place to control the birth is at that feeling, conditioning, craving, to not cross that bridge, so that that contact of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, pleasant or painful or neutral, it's not grasped in an unskillful way, but it's known, even an intensely painful feeling, like this really hurts. Like when Lumpur Prasanno broke his hip, or your pelvis, and he was taken into Ubon Hospital. He had a little accident on arms round one morning. Little adventurous...
That was the day before.
He broke his pelvis in Thailand, and the doctors wouldn't believe that he'd broken this serious injury because he was so calm about it. And he said, you know, you couldn't be like that if you'd broken your pelvis. You haven't broken your pelvis. And but it was because his... If you allow me to praise you in public. He was... it's like, you can't have broken it because you'd be screaming. You'd be, you know... But he said, it really hurts. But I'm not screaming. You know. It hurts. And then it turned out that it was broken. You know, his pelvis was broken. But... you know, if you sufficiently train the mind, then, or like the Buddha himself, you know, that he had chronic back pain, he was in feeling pain most of the time, but he knew how not to make a problem out of it. Sometimes in the suttas, he's giving a Dhamma talk and he'll say, Sariputta, my back is paining me. I'm gonna go and lie down to rest my back. The assembly is still awake. You know, please carry on giving a Dhamma talk. I'm going to rest my back. You know, or that he would give a Dhamma talk leaning against a pillar in the middle of the Dhamma hall, because you know it was the pain from his body was intense. So he knew it was there. He would work with it, and he would take action to ameliorate the painful feeling. But he knew how not to create suffering out of it. And so similarly with pleasant experiences. We can have something that is really beautiful, really delicious, you know, a lovely piece of music or something that we delight in on the sensory level. Or a meditation experience and say, wow, that is so beautiful, that is absolutely glorious, that's delightful. So? You can leave it, you're not pushing it away, you're not grasping hold, you're not, and the mind's not identifying with it. It's just that beautiful experience. There's no effort to try and keep it or own it or write a poem about it, you know. It's just this. I think I was maybe saying yesterday, it's a mysterious thing. I mean, it's a frequent subject that I talk about, but that when the mind doesn't try to grasp that beautiful feeling, as William Blake put it in one of his poems, he that kisseth a joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. If you kiss the joy as it flies, then you really enjoy it. He that binds himself to a joy doth the winged life destroy. You try and keep that joyful, beautiful quality, you end up spoiling it, destroying it by the very effort to keep it and own it and be it, to have it. So that that birth control, not that I'm against families and propagation of the human race, but that kind of psychological birth control is to do with training the heart to abide at in that spaciousness of perception and feeling, just to know that as it is. And that's, in a way, how we really enjoy our life, even with painful and difficult experiences. It's there's an ease and a rightness, an all-rightness with everything, that the mind isn't trying to get away from anything or be somewhere else. It's open to the present reality, irrespective of whether it's painful or pleasant or neutral experience. So that in terms of practicing Dhamma, training the heart to know pleasant feeling just as that, painful feeling just as that, neutral feeling just as that, and to be open to that without creating papancha, complication around it, then the life is continually joyful, even when it's painful. Yeah, it's totally okay. As like Master Xuanhua would say, everything is okay. So that's the short version of spiritual birth control.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, everybody. And that completes Katina Day 2.